Hello. Welcome to the Unity Spiritual Center of Albuquerque podcast featuring the Reverend Gordon Kyler, or occasionally a guest speaker. You can find us online at uscabq.org or by searching for Unity Spiritual Center Albuquerque on Facebook or YouTube. You can visit us in person at 9800 Candelaria Road Northeast in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And now, Reverend Gordon Kyler.
Wow, thank you. Thank you, Diana and band. Oh my gosh. How do you follow that? I have this dream, and actually it's going to be more than a dream because we are working on it, of having a Sunday where it's just our musicians. By the way, Memorial Day Sunday, that weekend, we will be doing a musical service. It will be different. And I'm excited about it. I hope everybody else is as well. Well, today we begin our spring adventures in faith based on the book Living Untethered. How many of you have read it already? Some of you, yeah. It was written by Michael Singer as a follow-up to his book, The Untethered Soul. How many of you read that one? More of you have read that one. All right. Adventures in Faith, if you're not familiar with what that is, it's an opportunity to join a small group study in a home or online. There is an online group as well during the week, and go deeper into the material than we can go in 20 minutes or an hour or so, depending on how long I feel like speaking, 20 minutes or so, then we can go on a Sunday morning. It's also an opportunity to build relationships with each other, to get to know each other on a deeper level, and to have fun. So if you have not joined a group yet, there's still time. There are still some slots available in the in-home groups. There's unlimited slots, essentially, in the virtual group. So Michael will be back, as I said earlier, at the table in the foyer after service to help you get signed up if you would still like to do that. So what is the untethered soul? Well, if you read the Amazon definition, it says it is a self-help book written by Michael A. Singer. It's more than a self-help book. It is a deep, deep dive into the core teachings of the great teachers we have had down through history, into the core teachings of the Buddha. You may notice, if you've read it or will read it, that there's a lot of similarities between what Michael Singer is writing about and what the Buddha taught. What you may not realize is there's also a lot of similarities between what Michael Singer wrote and what Jesus taught. You know, we have a problem with the teachings of Jesus that I think Buddhists don't have, at least in my experience. I've studied both. And one of the problems is that the teachings of Jesus were given at a time and in a language that we've lost. Whereas there's still some of the culture and language that the Buddha taught in. Sanskrit is still a common language in much of the world and is still the basis of so much of our language. And so it's easier to comprehend the ideas, I think. Whereas the teachings of Jesus were for his time and his place, but in languages that many people do not relate to anymore. Certainly Aramaic is no longer spoken. Latin is very rarely spoken. And how many of us can speak Greek? None. It's all Greek to me. Also, the culture has changed dramatically in the Western world. The spirituality has evolved down through the ages in a way that didn't happen in the East. But when we really can get into it and really begin to understand the teachings of Jesus, we discover that Jesus was teaching the same things as the Buddha was teaching. And indeed, as every great teacher the world has ever known has taught, because truth is truth. It doesn't change. We just package it differently. So Singer draws upon the principles from these various traditions and brings them into a modern language, a modern understanding that we can take in and use and work with. These principles include mindfulness, meditation, contemplative practices. He explores these topics and others, including surrender. How many of you have struggled with that idea of surrender? I'm a Taurus. We don't surrender. And I grew up saying, you have to surrender to God. And oh, I struggled with that because we have a different understanding in the West of what that word means. And I'm going to delve into that a little deeper in a few minutes. Michael Singer writes about how to let go of negative patterns and how to expand our consciousness beyond the limitations of ego. He provides a clear guidance for moving beyond the thoughts, the feelings, the habits that keep us stuck so that we can heal the pain of the past and let our spirits soar. I like what he writes in the very first pages of the books. He says, it is a fact that we each have a certain amount of time in each life to spend on earth. No one has figured out yet how to be immortal in one physical body, which is probably a good thing because it would get really crowded. But we do have a definite say in what our years in this life are like. Life can be exciting. Undoubtedly, life on this planet is a very exciting experience. It can bring forth enthusiasm and passion, inspiration at every turn. And when it unfolds that way, every day can be a beautiful adventure. But, he goes on to write, unfortunately, life on Earth rarely unfolds exactly as we want it to. Am I right? Is he right? And if we resist, our experience can be quite unpleasant. Resistance creates tension and anxiety and makes life a burden. Any Trekkies out there? You know how they always, the Borg always say, resistance is futile? I see there's only one Trekkie out there. Okay. Well, resistance is futile. And it really is. Because that which we resist, we are giving power to. What happens when you resist? Let's say that something's coming towards me in my life, and I'm going to resist it. So I stand there and I hold it back. But it keeps coming more and more and more. What happens eventually? I can't hold it anymore, and it bowls over. That's how resistance works. You cannot resist. It doesn't work. You can try, but you will fail. Michael Singer goes on to write, to avoid this burden and to be fully able to embrace life, wise ones throughout the ages have taught the importance of accepting reality, for it is only by accepting reality that we can work with the flow of life as it passes by and create a better world. So rather than resist and try to hold it back, we say, wait, what is this? What is this that I am experiencing in my life? How can I shift the energy of it? Any martial artists out here? You know, martial arts teaches you to use the energy of your attacker and to allow it to flow past you. And that's what this is about. All things that we resist are really there to be energy that can be used and transmuted. And rather than resist it, we embrace it and direct it. Think about Martin Luther King. He didn't resist what his people were experiencing. He said, let's take that energy and shift it and turn it into a dream that all people can embrace if they so choose. Not all people just chose. But if they so choose, we could capture the dream of all of us living as one, of all of us living with equality. We take the energy and we use it. That's the basis of a spiritual life. But it can oftentimes be difficult to grasp this. So in this series, over the next couple weeks in the home study groups and a little bit on Sunday mornings, we're going to look at the reasonableness, it's hard to say, of acceptance and the gifts that it promises of freedom, of peace, of inner enlightenment. And it's important to understand that these are not new ideas. The author has brought these ideas from the ancient teachers and made them easier to understand. Let's look at some of the teachings of the Buddha. 2,600 years ago, the Buddha gave us these teachings. Understanding impermanence. The Buddha taught that everything in the world, including our thoughts, feelings, and material possessions, are impermanent. Recognizing this helps to loosen our attachment to things, as we understand that holding on to them is futile. And when I say things, I'm not just talking about material things. What else do we hold on to? We hold on to ideas. Ideas of how we're not worthy. Ideas of how we are held back. Ideas of not enough. We hold on to those too. But when we let go of them, shift happens. The second thing the Buddha taught was let go of craving or desire. Craving is seen as the root cause of suffering. What do we crave? Not just material things. We crave peace. We crave love. Now you think, well, I don't want to let go of that. He doesn't say to let go of those things. He says to let go of the craving of those things. Because the craving of those things is the attitude, the consciousness that I don't have it. When in fact we do. We live in it. We breathe it. We are it. But when we're craving it, we've built up a wall. We've blinded ourselves to what is right within us. The Buddha taught about detachment from the ego, the non-self. It teaches us that there is no permanence to anything. And by understanding that the self is impermanent and constantly changing, we can detach from a sense of ownership. Oh, I own my beliefs. My beliefs that are true, my beliefs that are false, or we can let it go. And how do we do that? We do that through mindfulness or meditation. It's the same thing. It's a key practice in Buddhism. It actually was a key practice of Jesus, but we didn't have the same terminology. And through mindfulness or meditation, we learn to observe our thoughts and emotions as they arise without becoming attached to them. We can feel anger, and in that consciousness, we can say, oh, there's anger. There it is. But that is not who I am. It is not what I am. It may be what I am experiencing in the moment. And that allows us to practice compassion and loving kindness, not just for others, but for ourselves as well. Now, I want to say something about this. This does not mean we are indifferent. Instead, we have compassion. We have loving kindness towards ourselves and others. And by cultivating this, we can break down the barriers that separate us from one another. And all of that, the Buddha taught, leads to freedom from suffering, which is the ultimate goal of practicing non-attachment. Suffering is only ever self-inflicted, and it usually is inflicted by resistance. So what about what Jesus taught? Jesus taught the same thing in a different way. Jesus spoke of non-attachment. We often think he only spoke of material attachment. No, he spoke of the dangers of being overly attached to anything. In his Sermon on the Mount, he tells us to store up treasures not on earth, but in heaven. That's a metaphor. On earth is in our consciousness. In heaven is divine mind or divine consciousness, our higher consciousness, if you will. Where do we store our thoughts? Where do we gain our ideas from? Where do we get our sense of self from? From the world around us? By how many camels we owned or cars nowadays? Or what kind of house we live in? Or by the truth of who we are, what we are? Lights. Souls that are growing and expanding and learning. He taught the value of simplicity and living in trust with God's provision. He also talked about the renunciation of worldly desires. He called upon his followers to prioritize spiritual riches over worldly desires. And he spoke of seeking first the kingdom of God and its right useness. You can think of righteousness has some baggage because it has taken on a different meaning through the years. Like, well, I have righteousness and you don't. The word originally had to do with what I like to use, the word right useness. Using our spirit, using our power, using our intelligence in the right way rather than being filled with righteousness. He was addressing the ideas and emotions that blind us to who we truly are. For the rich young man, his attachment to material possession, which probably was also an attachment to fear of not enough, which is one of the biggest fears the whole human race deals with. And he says, you gotta let that go if you're gonna follow spirit. He emphasized the importance of love and compassion and forgiveness as values which transcend not only material attachment, but attachment to wrong ideas about who we are and what we are. He spoke about detachment from self, the self with the little s, teaching humility and selflessness as virtues to be cultivated. He said, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. Now, that's a passage that has been terribly misunderstood down through history and mistranslated. Because the passage in the original gospel, the word he used for cross was not crux imasa in Latin, which was what the Romans crucified people on. It was crux probo, which was the stand in the marketplace that you hung your wares on to identify who you were, what your business was, what you sold. So when he said, take up that and follow me, he was saying, take up your identity. Take up who you are and follow these teachings. Because guess what? They work. So the self-denial involves letting go of ego and personal desires in order to align with God's will. And what is God's will? What is God's will?
Love.
Love. God's will is to evolve, to grow, to become even more than you have been. Other teachers have taught the same thing. In the book, you'll read the author quotes Ramana Maharishi, who says, who sees when I see? Who hears when I hear? Who feels when I feel? We get into this idea of who is the thinker that is thinking me? Is this me? Is my mind me? We know we are more than this. He talks a lot about living inside, which is what every great teacher taught. Living inside. We can live inside or outside. We get stuck in living outside of ourselves in our world. We think we're our body. We think we're our thoughts. We think we're our feelings and experiences, rather than the understanding that I have a body. I have thoughts. I have feelings. I have experiences. But they are, in fact, transitory. And they are not me. Who is me? Do you know there is a you inside of you that is having the experience you call life? It is the inner self. It is your true self. And part of that self desires to have nice experiences. That's the author's words. Nice experiences. We all desire to have the life we dream of, right? A life where there's butterflies flitting around and pretty music and the sun is always warm. The wind doesn't blow the sand all over the place. And because we get hypnotized by that, we try our best to make things nice, but we do it from the outside in rather than from the inside out. We think, well, if I can have the right car or if I can live in the right house, life will be nice. If I can live in the right place, life will be nice. So I'm going to do everything I can in the outer to make life nice. Instead, this whole series is about how do I make it nice inside? And how do I start that? I start by asking, why is it not nice? Why isn't it nice? Because we know that the outer is but a reflection of the inner. And as I said, all too often, we try to make it nice from the outside in rather from the inside out. What we can do is realize I am in here. I am conscious, and what I am is consciousness. And consciousness is not always nice when it's focused on the outer. So I'm going to make it nice. Oftentimes, the way we try to do that, as I said, is we change the outer. We say, okay, well, I want to live in my idea of a nice neighborhood. A nice neighborhood for me would be where my neighbors let me blast my rock music when I feel like it. Because they're doing the same thing. We all have the same taste in music. A nice world for me would be pizza without olives on it. The problem is not everybody likes rock music. A lot of people like pizza with olives on it. I don't know why, but you do. We have different ideas of that. But within, we all crave the same things. There's only three things that we experience in consciousness. Did you know that? There's only three things you experience, because the outer world is nothing more or nothing less than is. The things that are going on in the world just are. We label them good, we label them bad, but what if we stopped labeling and said, those are things? And yes, I know you're probably sitting there thinking, well, Gordon, what about war? That's not good. No, it's not. But what's behind it? What are the causes? Most of it starts when somebody labels somebody good or bad, or some way of living good or bad. If we change the consciousness, we change the experience. So the central idea of this series we're embarking on is to explore the nature of things. Because our entire life is composed of consciously experiencing the outer world interpreted by our thoughts and emotions, rather than exploring the inner world and changing our view of the outer world. Because when we change our view, then we change how we show up, then we change how we interact, and then we change the world. We can free ourselves from the distractions of focusing on the outer that drag us away from our greatness. There is a great peace within us, the author writes, that cannot be disturbed by the outer world when we realize who we are and what we are. Jesus called it the peace that passes understanding. He taught that we could find it by being in the world, but not of the world. You know, all too often we think about these sayings of Jesus and we think about this big mystical thing that only the enlightened can understand. Only those who are sainted can understand. These were sayings that every human being could understand in his day. The peace that passes understanding comes from being in the world, but not of the world. Being, yes, we live in a world of experiences and all this, but it's transitory. It's not the truth. The truth is within me. The truth is in how I see my world, how I interact with my world. And if I want to change that, I start by changing me. You want peace in the world? Become peaceful. You want more love in the world? Become more loving. It's that simple. That's how change happens. So how do we do this? Well, there are several steps which the author goes into. First is acceptance. The understanding that things exist, events happen, the world is. And surrendering our attachment to the labels we have created about them. And let go and let God. Oh, there's one we throw around in unity all the time. Well, let go and let God. I think oftentimes we kind of use it as a platitude or a cop-out. Let go and let God. I'm not going to take any any role in this or anything. God will do it. We are God. We are God expressing. So when we say let go and let God, what we really are saying is let go of the appearance and our reaction to it. Instead, let the Spirit within us see it anew. See it anew. Because then we create in new ways. I love what I heard a Unity minister say one time. We often create a mess, and when we do so, we create a mess. But when we create within, then we create what the author calls nice. The author also, as I said earlier, talks a lot about surrender, letting go of our attachment to outcomes, desires, or worries. What if we could say, well, this has to happen for me to be happy, and change that to something wonderful is going to happen. I'm going to do the inner work, and I'm going to let God show me what is going to manifest. I'm going to let it flow. Oftentimes, in my experience anyway, when I let go of my expectations, it's okay to have a vision. You got to have a vision. But I let go of my expectations for something bigger, something better, and guess what? What manifests is beyond what I could have possibly imagined. So it's about acknowledging that there are forces beyond our understanding or control and being willing to relinquish our grip on those situations or circumstances. It means surrendering to what is without labeling it. That requires a great level of trust. It really does. And for many of us, this is difficult. You know, they say, well, trust Jesus or trust God. How many of you do that really easily? You all are honest. Wow, good for you. That's tough to do. But when we can begin to do that by letting God or God in and as us express, we can trust in the divine wisdom, in the cosmic order, and believe that things will unfold as they should and that there's a greater purpose at work. And then our role becomes to align ourselves with that energy of creation, with universe or divine will. Call it what you will. Rather than trying to force an outcome, we allow it to flow through us, and we become a part of the energy of that outcome manifesting through us. We become co-creators. Now, that doesn't mean passivity. Rather, it means to actively participate in the co-creation of life with the universe or with God. And that occurs through aligning our intentions, actions, and energy with divine guidance, divine mind, cosmic principle, God, call it what you will. It means being in oneness. So what this whole series is about, it's about coming to the understanding that we have the power to create a new world, but we do it within first. We have the power and the ability to become untethered from the outer world, to become an untethered soul and the inner labeling of that world. We can become who we are meant to become, limitless beings, free to create the world we dream of, but only if we become untethered. Happy Mother's Day.
We hope you enjoyed today's message. If you would like to support this podcast, you may do so at uscabq.org.